Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Bowlology Report. Damien Fleming here. Plenty to talk about. The men's Ashes starts tomorrow at the Gabba. It's very, very exciting. And the banter on social media. Ex-players are going at current players, vice versa. It's been excellent to have a look at and building up the passion going into this Gabba test match. Also, the England won the last T20 game, the ladies, and but unfortunately for them, the Aussies have regained the Ashes. We've got Brad Hodges, Social Media Self-Promoter Award. Also, our guide, our special guest, is going to go through his guide to having a beer after a bowling day. And our special guest today is one of the greatest fast bowlers Australia's produced, one of the greatest characters this country's produced, one of the greatest men that has been born down under, Jason Dizzy Gillespie. Diz, welcome to the Bowlology Report.
Thank you very much, Flem. Thanks, Hodgie. Really excited to be here. It's fantastic. Thank you for inviting me.
No, it is. And Hodgie's coaching at the Victorian Second Eleven at the moment, right. So we'll be hoping to at least get him in for the Social Media Self-Promoter Award. Hey, Diz, you were known as Mr. Ashes during your career. 65 wickets at 29, a best of 7 for 38. At Headingley in 1997?
Yeah, 7 for 37, Flem. No, you've done your research.
I just did a little half volley there.
Yeah, I know.
I just want to know if it was your best, you
just
knew your best volley.
Well, yep. I knew yep. Does that mean it's self-promotion or?
It might be, but no, it's not on social media.
Right, okay, so yeah. That's fine. No, but look, I was very fortunate to represent our country and play in a number of Ashes series, four winning ones, which
four
was great.
Four of them,
yeah. Yeah, very fortunate man. So.
And you're comfortable with the title, Mr. Ashes?
Well, you're the first person that's ever said it, and I think you're the only one, and you're the only one that ever will. So, but thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, Diz, what about when I think of you at the Gabba, obviously bowling those fast deliveries that you used to bowl and in the Gillespie hallway of hesitation, what about the 50 against New Zealand at the Gabba, career highlight?
Yeah, one of the career highlights, absolutely. And watching Pidgey get his 61 at the other end, probably the equivalent of Ricky getting 800, which was amazing to watch and to be.
And that was worked out, wasn't it? Because he was averaging 6 and got 60.
I think he was averaging 5. Yeah, so
yeah,
he got 60.
Times.
So let's have 12 times his average. So, yeah, so what would Ricky average? 57 or something? So, yeah, well over 600.
And the celebration for 50? At the Happy Gilmore Happy Place. That was a commitment to a mate of yours?
To the Adelaide Cricket Club. I did say the Mighty Buffaloes. I said I would do a skip down the wicket. If I ever got a 50 in Test cricket, which at the time I never thought would be possible.
Because Test matches only go 5 days.
Exactly.
So did
right.
you think there wasn't enough time to make a 50?
Pretty much. With
your boring rate,
with a strike
defense.
Rate of 5, yeah. I thought it would be a bit of a challenge.
And well, do you remember a little story? I heard a little whisper that you got heckled a little bit by your batting partner
when
you went into the dressing rooms.
I did, Flem. And this started immediately after Glenn and my 100-plus partnership against New Zealand at the Gabba. And as I was taking the pads off and we were getting ready to go out and bowl, Glenn actually said to me, "Oh, so, Diz, what's your highest test score?" And from then on, the banter just went on and
so you couldn't just enjoy your first 50.
I was trying to enjoy my mate's first class 50. I was trying to enjoy my first test 50. But yeah, he had to rub it in, wind me up. and probably spurred me on to bigger things. But I had
201. We know.
I had my day.
Yeah, well,
many days later.
No, well done on your 54.
Thank you.
At the Gabba, just 17 runs short of my highest score there. 71 against England, 98-99. Hey, mate, what about our guide to cricket this week? And the first off, what about Aussie selection? What were your thoughts when you first heard Tim Payne is wicketkeeper for the first two tests?
I genuinely was shocked. You know, he'd been involved with the T20 side, but he hadn't been playing for Tasmania. I think he kept in five of Tasmania's last 23 first-class games, 23 Shield games. He'd been playing as a specialist batter. In his last 3 years, he'd been averaging 16 with a bat in Sheffield Shield cricket.
Yeah.
So that you could argue quite strongly that that contradicts the whole performing Shield. You know, which other guys have been given opportunities through sheer volume of performance. So that contradicted it a little bit. Listening to the selectors and the reasoning behind it, obviously Tim, you know, look, the fact that he's a fine keeper has been without question. We all know that. We appreciate that and we respect his work. But I think it's just the way that the selectors came out and made it very clear that spots were up for grabs. And whoever grabbed those opportunities would potentially get opportunities. I don't see how Tim Payne necessarily grabbed those opportunities.
I do like how they've left the door open that you might be batting six or bowling third change in Shield cricket and you could keep for your country.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you could be playing Futures League and, you know, it's very interesting.
And the thing is about Tim Payne, though, like I was coaching him at the academy. You know, he is a fine cricketer, tough man. He looks like a pretty boy, but he's got real resilience about him. Those four tests in India 7 years ago, he averaged 36.
That's 92.
You know, kept quite well. I would have thought.
On that logic, I should be batting three for Australia.
Yeah, yours was how long ago?
You just said Tim Payne 7 years ago.
7 years ago. How long was yours? 10 years ago. You could probably bat eight.
Right. Okay.
Each year you drop down a bit.
Right.
But I'm just saying that I would have thought after Brad Haddin retired, I thought at that stage Tim Payne was the man. But he had that injury blow. Dirk Nannis smashed his hand in a celebrity game. You know, he felt like it didn't affect his keeping as much, but just his batting and the way he was gripping the bat. But the thing is he going to give you much more than what we've already seen from Peter Neville in Test match cricket and Matthew Wade. That's the big one for me.
Are you thinking from a batting point of view or a keeping
from
point
both.
Of view? Well, for me, Neville is a fine keeper. My personal opinion, I didn't think he should have been dropped in the first place.
Same
Wade.
With me.
And then when Wade got the opportunity, I think he's being judged on performances in the subcontinent, which is notoriously difficult to keep up to the stumps a lot. He's going to be in Australia. He would have been keeping back to the quicks for the majority of the time. So, you know, Wade could potentially consider himself a little bit unlucky
in
as
the
well.
Subcontinent, but, he was batting, but...
However, I think the general consensus is that the right decision to change the keeper is justified. It's just that the fact they've picked Payne has been a bit of a surprise for people.
What about the other two, Cam Bancroft? I'm a bit of a traditionalist. You know, I feel like if you played the last test and you've been going okay, it's for you to lose.
Yep.
And so I would have been quite conservative. I could have lived with Renshaw opening, Maxwell 6 and Neville 7. But the one bloke who has at least just put some big numbers up there after being close to selection 2 years ago on the Bangladesh tour that got called off was Cam Bancroft. So at least for me, he can't be any more comfortable or confident going into his first test match with the amount of runs that he scored.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think the fact that he scored a lot of runs, he was told, right, high performance. Manager Pat Howard, coach Darren Lehman, chairman selectors Trevor Holmes have all been very clear. Performances in Shield cricket are going to count. And this is why it's a little bit
surprising. So he's one that has ticked that box.
He's absolutely done that. You know, this is where I think sometimes the selectors can contradict themselves because they say, oh, in the past, someone has performed strongly and got a game. Cameron Bancroft in the past, he averaged 28 in Shield cricket last year. So you're not taking his past, you're only focusing on the present now. But with other selections, you're not taking the present into account, but you're focusing on the past. So this is where I think...
Inconsistencies.
The general public find that a little bit confusing. So this is where potentially I think selectors can be a bit better with the clarity of explanation with regard to selection and, importantly, non-selection.
And for Sean Marsh, it's pretty clear. You know, he's been in and out of the team 8 times, averages mid-30s. Didn't force his way in, just averaged about 39 in Shield cricket. When he bats at his best, I said last week, he looks as good as any batsman in Australia. But he's got 2 tests, hasn't he?
Yeah, completely agree. He's he'll probably get a couple, may get more, but I sense that if he's going to bat in that pivotal number 6 position, you just wonder whether after the first 2 tests, the selectors looking to Perth, Melbourne, are thinking we may need another seam bowling option in the top 6. Yep. So they may look to make a change. So hence, Sean Marsh maybe played these first 2 tests, as you mentioned. We'll review his how he's gone.
What we want from number 6.
And what we want from number 6, and we'll go from there.
What about the banter that's been going on Twitter, Diz? So were you on top of that? I mean, Nath Lyon was a press conference, and he said that Matty Pryor, the former English keeper, was scared in that game against when Mitchell Johnson was bowling quite quick in that series there. And Matty Pryor, he just unloaded on Twitter. And then a response from Mitchell Johnson.
Which you quite enjoyed.
I thought Mitchell Johnson, he won that battle, I reckon. He sort of mentioned that, if you weren't scared, we apologise. Mm. But I did enjoy picking up your bat that you threw in the bin after that test match, which could be read that that was the end of your career there. But and then also the big dogs, Matty Hayden and Ben Stokes. So Haydos has gone out there with they're a rabble, and I don't know half the team. And Benny Stokes has gone, well, you call yourself a media pundit and you don't know half the team. How are you going? But I don't mind it. I don't mind the banter pre-series. It just puts more interest in.
Yeah.
And really, once you get on the field, how much does that come into play anyway?
Yeah, I think everyone's just taking it with a grain of salt. I think that the Nathan Lyon, Matt Pryor, I think knowing Nathan, he's a deadpan type of character. He's just having a little bit of a laugh. He would have said that, had a little giggle and thought nothing of it. And it's now turned into a bit of a social media storm. You know, Matty Pryor, I think part of him would have wanted to laugh it off. But if you're basically what Nathan is in jest has suggested is that, you know, you're questioning someone's heart and someone's ticket, and that could annoy people. And it certainly annoyed Matt Pryor, and he's come back pretty strong.
The only thing I would say is if I was facing Mitchell Johnson in that series, I would have been scared.
No question. And let's be honest. I mean, you know, anyone who says they genuinely love facing 90-plus mile-an-hour fast bowling that's coming through you at throat height is
And it's
lying.
Also, you know, the way that Johnson bowled, there was sheer hostility, isn't there? Like, you can bowl face fast people who are skidders a bit, and you just know, well, they're trying to get me out bowled or LB, I don't think they're going to bounce me too much until I'm set. Mm. But Mitchell Johnson, that extreme pace, but also that unique bounce you get off the length, I don't want to face that.
No, certainly not. And I think, reflecting on that series, I think England just were basically laughing off the threat of Mitchell Johnson. They'd seen him as a bit of a pantomime villain in the past and who couldn't really control the ball and who got affected by the crowd.
Yeah.
But, you know, those in the know, and I know speaking to Troy Cooley, he said before that series, he said, this guy, just watch him, he is going to absolutely tear the house down. And he's proven very correct.
And we've got a few blokes who might be doing that as well, Cummins, Stark and Josh Hazlewood. Hey, you've had a look at the Gabba pitch. What were your thoughts?
I think it's a pretty good surface. It's something we're pretty much Gabba test wicket. We say it every single year. It's going to do a little bit early doors, particularly with the first hour or so, particularly if there's a little bit of atmospheric conditions. But it will be a good batting surface. The ball will come onto the bat nicely. Batsmen will be able to predict if they're judging length, they'll be able to trust the bounce.
Consistent bounce.
It'll be consistent for them. And they'll be able to play their shots, you know, when they hit through the line, and they'll get rewarded for those shots. And I know you have some stats on the Gabba
It's
wicket.
Quite amazing, because I know myself, just in a couple of tests I played there in Shield games, unless it was green seamers, I felt on day 3, 2, 3 and 4, like it was an absolute belter, because the actual ball come on, and I found like the avenue of apprehension, it actually got smaller and smaller if you weren't getting there. Now, if you bowled on day 1, it was swinging and a little bit green, happy days. Then I had a test match, the odd Shield game, you know, on day four and day five, it went reverse.
Yeah.
So you were in the game. But between that, I reckon it was a batathon. And you look on CricBiz, it's actually a good analysis cricket site.
Yeah.
It's the third quickest scoring ground in the world, 3.27 runs per over. It averages 35 a wicket, which is really, really high. And the other one I thought was, I always think Warnie getting so many wickets here. I played in tests when Stuart McGill got wickets, but spinners average 45 a wicket here. So it's not actually as bowler friendly as people think. Mm. And particularly for the spin, if the minimal spin, and yes, you get a bit of bounce, but I reckon your corridor gets really, really small as a spinner as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head. The avenue of apprehension, it does become narrow. The spot you're looking to hit on the pitch, you know, as a bowler, your goal, you want to make that area as big as possible. But, you know, good batting and, you know, the nature of the surface dictates how big that spot on the surface is. And, Gabba, you know, I felt it at times as well in the times I've played there, that, you know, your margin for error was a lot less.
Hey, Diz, what about the fast bowling cartel? I read reports during the week, big Joshy Hazlewood and Starkey and Patrick Cummins and Jackson Bird, they watched some vision to pump themselves up. They watched Mitchell Johnson's video highlights of that 2013-14 season, which was exhilarating.
Did they play that to the tune of Eye of the Tiger?
It would have to be Eye of the Tiger. Would you think a bit of a pump up? But that is miles away from the videos we used to watch when we were playing for Australia. We used to watch things like Dumb Dumber.
Yep.
Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Happy Gilmore.
And for what that says, a different era for me, but also what about where does the banter go on the field? I remember, you know, when it was struggling a bit and we're on the field there and one of us would just have to say, you know, hey, pull over, you know, and you'd say...
But it's a cardigan. Thanks for noticing.
You know, a bit of laughter during the test match. They can't do that, the modern fast bowling cartel. They just got Mitchell Johnson highlights there.
Yeah.
Maybe if they did have music background, you could hum that, but...
Yeah, true.
It's a change of era. Yeah, I don't know if it's...
It certainly is, but...
I don't know if it's for the best, though. Yeah. Warner's injured, but he's going to play, though, I reckon. But if he doesn't, Glenn Maxwell's coming up. Yep. I'm hearing the latest is Sean Marsh will go up to open from number six.
Okay.
So that's a big call, and Maxwell will slot in at six. But it is likely that Warner will play.
Right.
And we need him. We need the ball, not the rev. We want the ball.
We don't want the rev.
Leave the rev with the family, hotel room, cross the white line. Yep. The ball's going to play shots. And I rate our batting a little bit better. Like Smith and Root might cancel each other out. Warner's ahead of Cook in my boot, but Usman Khawaja's the man. Averages 64.
Yeah,
I'm banking on a big series for him.
I don't disagree. Usman's recent record in Australia, not just at the Gabba, but all around the country, he's been phenomenal. We know of his. He's had some struggles on the subcontinent. What is interesting to know, right arm off spin is not Usman Khawaja's strength.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has struggled against various off-spinners in the past. So I suspect if England have done their homework, and I'm sure they have, don't be surprised, even if the ball is hard and new, that Moeen Ali comes on and bowls to Usman Khawaja early on.
That's your call, is it? And for Usman, I'd just play him like a slow medium bowler. He's not going to spin it that far.
He's not going to spin it.
No. What about English batting? The worry for me is... Three of the top five are unproven at test level.
Yep.
Stoneman, Vince and Milan.
Yep.
You know a fair bit about English cricket. Mm. They need two of them to perform, don't they, if they're going to win this series.
Yep, and it's going to be obviously opening the batting with Cook. I think Stoneman's probably the best equipped. He's played a lot of grade cricket in Sydney. He's played at Durham, at Chesterfield Street, for the majority of his career. I know he's moved to Surrey now, but he's played the majority of his career there and scored... really good runs in.
Looks like he knows his game quite well.
He does. Yeah. His idol is Michael Divinuto, and so he plays.
So he's going to pull half ollies.
Pretty much. He plays well, square of the wicket, off the back foot. He's not afraid to take the bowlers on. He knows where his off stump is. He is a good player. I think he can adapt. James Vince, is an interesting selection. I think though the selectors hierarchy feel that he's got the back foot game to succeed in Australia.
Okay.
But if you look at his Division 2 to Division 1 batting averages in county cricket in England, Division 1 being the division where most of the test grounds are at and tend to have the deeper bowling attacks, he doesn't average anywhere near what he averages in Division 2 against the more medium pace attacks. So that'll be interesting to see that those numbers kind of contradict what the selectors have seen.
Yeah.
However, you know, there have been glimpses where at times he's scored good runs against some good attacks. So that's probably what the selectors have seen. And look, we'll see how he goes batting at three. I think England need to be on the front foot and bat Joe Root at three. He's their best player. But for him, it's interesting that both captains want to bat at four and they don't want to bat at three, being the side's best players. So that's an interesting decision by those guys. And Milan,
I think Stephen Smith's not against three. I just feel like, well, where do you bat Khawaja then?
Yeah, and that's probably a good point. Yeah. So,
but English, you know, if they can get some runs and blunt the new ball, I see Bairstow and Ali and Wokes, particularly the first two of them, they're serious test players, and they score very quickly.
They score at good pace. Bairstow certainly is not shy. Averages 50 40, in test cricket, close to 50 in test cricket. I mean, he is, the best performed wicketkeeper batsman ever for England. If you're looking at raw data, raw numbers, he's at the top of the tree. So he needs to be respected. He's a very good player. He is vulnerable if, you attack the stumps early. He can score off the stumps, but he also can miss a straight one from time to time. So I know Australia, if they've done their homework, they'll be looking to home in on that off stump.
Okay, angry during the week.
Why were you angry?
Disappointed. I was a little bit sad. One of my favourite bands of all time, AC/DC. We're both rock fans.
Yep.
Malcolm Young, founder of the band, rhythm guitar, up there with Keith Richards as the greatest rhythm guitarist of all time, passed away.
Yeah.
And I went through a day of just going through, Power Age, Back in Black, Cold Way to Hell, all that sort of stuff. And then I saw on social media, a little interview, our Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull. Right. Yeah.
What did he have to say?
And they just asked him, how sad it was that, Malcolm Young passed away. And he said, yes, it is. And they just said, can you name your favourite AC/DC song? That's when there was silence. And that's when I got a bit angry. Surely, I don't care about dual citizenship. You can be a triple citizenship and still be a politician in Australia. If you don't know an AC/DC song, you can't be a politician, let alone Prime Minister. Mm. Yeah, thoughts?
Yeah, very disappointing to hear and read about that.
A long way to the top.
If you want to rock and roll.
But how can Malcolm not? And then I thought, to help them out, if they don't know the music, Aussie music, what about cricketers walk out in one-day games, T20, to songs, their favourite songs and all that stuff? Why can't politicians, question time, as they walk in there and all that, why can't they have an Australian epic song to walk out to, and then even if they don't pick it themselves, subconsciously, it'll be in their brain. What about that?
I think it'd be fantastic. I'll tell you what I'd love in question time. If one of the politicians stood up to Mental as Anything's Live It Up.
Live It Up.
Because everyone in there has got a sad face. They can all come to our place and live it up, can't they?
I like that. Yeah. I think that was a hit in England as well.
Was it? Live It Up.
Yeah. And maybe do some trivia there. Imagine that.
Oh, that'd be quality.
That could work all right. Deez, what about the Women's Ashes? Some good stuff there.
Brilliant.
England finished on a high note. It was an amazing game last night. T20, the scores, England 6 for 181, Australia 2 for 178 batting first. So England won by 4 wickets, but 200s in one T20 game. So Beth Mooney, she smoked them everywhere, 117 off 70 balls. So you think you'd be home. But Danny Wyatt for England, first ever T20 100 for an English woman, 56 deliveries, got them home by 4 wickets. So to think of where the game's gone that far, that 360 runs were scored in close to 40 overs is phenomenal.
Because it's only been in the recent last few years, where you watch a T20 international and it is maybe 120 v 110. So on par with a run of ball.
This is off the rails now.
This is off the charts, and it's great. And it just shows, I think, it correlates with the professionalism that's come into the game. The game the women's game has probably been caught up in terms of the respect that's been shown. The girls are
I wonder
very
if the
athletic.
Individual T20 competitions have helped as well.
Without a doubt. Well, actually just playing more and being in those situations in games. You can train as much as you want in the nets, but until you're out there in the middle, find yourself in different situations, having to adapt your game, this is what it's all about. And that's why we're seeing improvements in the men's game as well in T20. We've seen that over the years, that now.
So in the end, Aussie captain Rachel Haynes was presented the Ashes trophy from Aussie legend Belinda Clark. You've got to remember, this is without Meg Lanning. Mm. And then there was some great performances from younger players.
Yeah. Like Ash Gardner, as you mentioned. Amanda Jade Wellington.
The leg spinner.
Leg spinner. She's fantastic.
Megan shoots and in Megan. Swingers. What about them?
She swings them both ways, doesn't she? She's a fine exponent of swinging the ball. Like, she's a fantastic bowler and leads the attack very well.
Okay, time for, I don't know if you know this segment, Hodgie's social media self-promoter awards.
I do know this segment.
A year ago, celebrities, sports people, they're just tweeting, Instagram, Facebook, without accountability. And one man has made it his own personal responsibility to scour the net. And if you self-promote yourself, if you promote something that might give you something free down the track, this man, Bradley Hodge, will know you. Hodgie, can you take us through your social media self-promoter award, please?
Right, here we go. Well, I'm going to start off with, seems how there's a fast bowling cartel there today. Patrick Cummings is our first cab off the rank, and his social self-media self-promotions. The day I lost 6.5 kilos, so he's got a picture of himself looking tasty on Bondi Beach. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done, but it was no longer me versus my body. Patty, come on. We know bowling fast is difficult, but there's nothing more harder than that. That's just saying you're a pretty tough, strong, fast bowler.
Yeah.
I think that's out there to just
that's
say, look, I'm tough. What the funny thing was on this, though, that this wasn't actually... There was a bit of self-promotion that Craig Simmons actually retorted to this actual tweet. And he says, well, that reminds me of the day that I ate a couple of hot dogs on the way to the ground. I put on 6.5 kilos and I got a duck when I got there. So I did like that. I wasn't sure whether that was promotion or non-self-promotion
that's
from Craig
awesome.
Simmons. Yeah, but we like that. Our next cab off the rank is... another fast bowling cartel. And I love this one because it's brought Matthew Hayden back into the social media world. And this is the great Shoaibak. Yeah, so for no particular reason at all, Shoaibak does put his wickets on at the wacky ground. And he's got him coming around the wicket and knocking Matthew Hayden's off stump out of the ground. So Shoaib's just kindly said, throwback to the good old days, first test match of the wacker. What a match it was. It was always fun playing against Matthew Hayden, Shoaib Akhtar, blah, 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 hashtag Rural Pindi Express.
Oh, wow.
What?
Yeah.
That's
so
media taunting.
Isn't it? So that is, that's just blatant self-promotion of one's definite ability. And let's be honest.
Was there any retort from Matty Hayden?
There's no Wi-Fi out on the Hayden Way vessel while he's, the V8 supercars are up in Townsville. I'm sure he's hot nomming up there this week, catching some marlin offshore, doing the Hayden Way.
Yeah.
We'll wait for something. Next one is a return to the fold again from KP. So, a serial offender, Kevin
golf.
Peterson.
Golf?
No, not golf. But look, he's on his way out here to the Ashes. So he's obviously on the commentary team, the big fella, and probably coming out here for some big bash as well. But he said, this is his tweet, heard plenty about the at Singapore Airlines suites. So giving them a go to the hashtag Ashes. See you soon, Aussies. Love you. So this is the first class suite which he's flying out in the Singapore Airlines. So, he's... It can't get much cruder than that, actually. Just rubbing it into the plebs, showing them that the first-class suites. So another good show there from Calvin Peterson.
He's just
so
educating
well done.
The common man.
Isn't he? So whatever he's doing, but we love it, because that's why we love KP. Now, this is a Dolphin from Philip Bro, who's in Michael Vaughan. So we've gone for an Ashes flavour this yeah. week. Michael Vaughan has tweeted up, decisions made at Callaway Golf EU. You know, clubs packed. Pretty sure I'll be getting a few days off when England win inside 5 days.
Yeah.
We know that as soon as you mention some form of product, it's free. It's free. We know it's free.
And the cricket comment doesn't throw you off the scent, does it?
No, no chance. That's
free
just,
golf club.
We're onto that. We know that. So that's it. I've only got four.
Yeah.
So I went for a fast bowling cartel because, you know, I knew that the big Dujuan was on. And it was a mullet off in the dressing room between you two.
Yes.
And the two English boys there in KP and Michael Vaughan. So it's a short spiel this week, but pretty cool anyway.
There's big boats here. I'll go one, two. Out of all of them, I think Paddy Cummins, and I loved it from Craig Simmons, the reply. I'm going to give him one vote. I'm going to give Warney two, you know, for the golf clubs, because the other two are off the rails. Three votes to KP. We love him. I don't even know. He's Mr. Consistency with self-promotion. I don't think there's been a week he hasn't had a vote, Hodgie.
No. He's a serial offender, no doubt.
But if I could give double votes, show of actor. Well, I mean, many of us sometimes, you know, we've got a lot of Indian followers. They might send some footage of your career and, you know, I'm always a bit hesitant to retweet it. I might like it.
Yeah.
But Chob's actually got his own footage and put it out on social media.
Yeah.
Taunted Big Dossie. There'll be, watch the Hayden Way, because there'll be a comeback somewhere here. But that's four votes, maximum votes for Chob actor. Okay, our guide to, and you're going to take us through this, Diz, our guide to, or your guide to, having a beer after a bowling day. Take us through it.
Yeah, beer after a bowling day. Where this happened, Flynn, was, well, where this started, was we were playing at the Gabba.
Gabba, yes.
Against England, early 2000s. I think it was 2003, from memory. And we got wind during the match that at some point, a couple of the Brisbane Lions AFL players were going to come into our dressing room and just come in for a beer and socialise. Well, the King, Shane Warne, and we call him the King because he insisted on us calling him that.
But he was the King. I remember about mid-90s, after he'd been a legend for years, I was batting with him and I said, shot King. But I was playing against New South Wales and Maui Matthews at Cafe goes, hey man, I'm the King. So I think he'd been going under the King court in New South Wales. And in Shield cricket he was, wasn't he? He was
absolutely
a really good player.
Player.
But I did turn him and go, oh, I think there's a new King in town.
Yeah.
You can't warn Matthews.
I think you're absolutely right.
Break.
You know, there's a passing of the torch with these things.
Yes. But Warney's excited. He's a big Aussie rules man. A
big Aussie rules fan. And so after this day's play, normally the great man is one of, if not the last man off. Because, you know, look, The centre of the ground is his theatre.
Yes.
You know, it is. That's his. He's up on stage. That's his moment. He's always hotter than everyone. And he's done more
the
work.
The fans get to wait. You know, who's the last? They get one last look
at
of the King.
The great man.
Yeah.
But we see this puff of dust as we're just, you know, stumps are drawn, the umpires are taking the bails off, and the King is
Warney's
making a
first.
Beeline. He was first by the length of the straight. And he's in the drip. We're all looking at each other. What's going on here? And sure enough, we arrive in the dressing rooms and not long followed after by a couple of the AFL lads who were coming in. And there is the man, the great man, SK Warne, in the corner, already shirt off, in his pants off, just in the bike shorts, ice pack on the knee. He's got dart in one hand. He's got VB in the other.
A beer.
He's got a beer, and which I know would be a surprise to you.
Not a noted beer drinker. Like
not a noted beer drinker.
More a Maduri lemonade.
Yeah, West Coast cooler.
But a cold beer, okay.
A cold beer. And so we've walked
in the dressing room, what's going on there?
Well, there's a bit of muffled commotion amongst the boys just in low tones. Oh, have a look at the King. He's just suck him back on a brewski there. Because he wanted to give off the impression that he's the old school cricketer. Yeah. You know, he's worked hard, and he did. He worked really hard that day.
Oh, no, there's no harder work on the course on the field than Shane.
Absolutely. But knowing that
the image of an Australian cricketer is they're drinking beer after the day's play, aren't they?
Old school, ice pack on the knee, dart out of the hanging out of the gob. So we realised that. Said, "Oh, okay, the AFL boys are in." So they've come in, and he's made them feel very welcome, as he always did. He was wonderful like that. So they go and sit either side of the king, and he's holding court, which is what he did.
And his element.
But yeah, no one had said it. No one was going to say anything. No one dared say anything or question the king. But we had one ace up our sleeve, and that was the great Glenn McGrath, who had not appeared in the dressing room as yet. So I think he was doing some media.
A peer equal of Warne.
And one of the guys, a bit like a Mark Waugh type, would say what everyone else is thinking. Straight down the line. No
country boy.
No flies on him.
No.
So the big Pidge walks in. He takes a glance, he has a second look, and then he's very particular. Pidge, he takes his baggy green off and puts it on the hook, and he's just sitting down, unlacing his boots, and then he finally can't stand it any longer. He gets up and, "Warnie, what is going on here?" And Warnie sort of just stops, and he's wide-eyed. What, Pidge? Pidge, what?
Oh, he knows what's coming.
He knows what's coming. And Pidgey's gone, "What are you doing drinking a beer?" And he's like, mate? And Pidgey's gone, "Warnie, I've played test cricket with you for 10 years and I've never seen you drink a beer." And Warnie's response is now in the Australian dressing room folklore. Pidge, I always have a beer on a bowling day. Wow. You could have heard a pin drop.
Boom.
Boom. So from that moment on, I happened to be just sitting there, just quietly minding my own business, and I look to my right and I see our big-eared wicketkeeper, Mr. Gilchrist, and then I look further to my right and I see our esteemed left-handed batsman who's now coach of Australia, Darren Scott-Lehman.
You're all thinking the same thing.
We're all thinking the same thing, and what we're thinking is, well, the king has said he has a beer after every bowling day. We will make sure that he has a beer after every bowling day. So we made a pact that one of us, after each day's play, when we're out in the field, one of us will hightail it off the ground, race in, open a lovely ice-cold, frosty beer, and just lovingly place it on the king's gear near his fags and just let him enjoy
after
that.
Every day, after every bowling day.
Because, you know,
so you'd get off early, he'd be last, and you'll be sitting there looking at the cold beer, waiting for his reaction.
Absolutely.
And how'd he go?
And
He's a proud man.
He's a very proud man. There are a few teapots, hands on the hips. But to his credit, for those first four test matches, he's a stubborn man. He wouldn't let anyone in. He is sitting down, and that beer is going down like absolute razor blades. Everyone in the dressing room, all the players, all the support staff and the like, everyone's in on the joke. It's gone around like Chinese whispers very quickly after that first test. So everyone has a little bit of a giggle because all we're waiting for is the great man's reaction.
Yeah.
And at this point, he hasn't given us a reaction other than a very slow consuming of the product. But where the proverbial hit the fan, Flem, was in the fifth test in Sydney. The king had a decidedly hot day out there, and the king has come off last, as per usual, and we're in the dressing room, and there was a nice cold beer.
Frosty,
lovingly placed on the great man's spot. And he's come in, and he's kicking cans. He's a bit grumpy. He's a bit hot and bothered, the great man. All he wants to do is go in, sit down, maybe have a shower, and just have a doig, and be done with it. And there it is. There it is, sitting on his kit. And
can't drink itself.
It can't drink itself. He could just see him wrestling with this dilemma. You know, I've told everyone that I have a beer on a bowling day, but God, I'm so annoyed here. And that annoying...
It broke the seal.
It broke the camel's back, and he lost it. And he started to, who the hell is doing? Who keeps leaving this bloody beer on my spot? And yeah, he was a bit upset, the great man. And Then he realised that when everyone, to a man in that dressing room, was in on it and everyone burst out laughing, we won that little medal.
He conceded.
And he conceded and he looked... He's looking around the room because he's searching for the culprits.
Yeah.
And then he sees three sniggering idiots in the corner, Messrs. Gillespie, Gilchrist and Lehman, and he knew. And to this day, he hasn't spoken to me.
No, well, you know, you can get a...
He's been a bit grumpy with his old mate Diz, but, you know, look, all is forgiven. Jokes aside.
No, I love that. So you have your guide to a beer after bowling day. Make sure you actually... like beer.
Enjoy beer, and that's
our guy.
Yeah.
All right, Diz, we've got to finish up here. And, well, thanks for coming on the Bowlology Report as well. How's the Gabba going to play out, the Gabba test match?
Yeah, look, I think it's going to be a good test. That's going to be a little bit closer than people think, but I just have a nagging suspicion that with the Australian bowling lineup, I think it's got a little bit more firepower. A little bit more variation than the English attack. I think the English attack's a little bit samey. Right arm seamers, I think, with the differential with the Australian, you've got Stark, left arm, of course, but swings the old ball. You know, I think for his improvement as a bowler, he has to learn when the ball's not doing a lot to lock in on that discipline line and length.
Yep.
Yeah, just be able to play that little holding role if required by the captain. Paddy Cummins, I don't want people to have
it's
too many...
It's his first test in Australia.
Absolutely. I don't want people to have too much expectation on him. We know how exciting he is, and he's going to do fine.
Yeah.
But I don't want people to expect he's going to take 6 wickets a test. I don't see him as that bowler moving forward. I see he'll be a very disciplined bowler, line and length, but he'll have really good pace and be able to bowl those short penetrating spells with bounces and things like that. I see the key to the Australian success is Josh Hazlewood. I think with his unnerving accuracy and his long penetrative spells, supported by Stark, Cummins and Nathan Lyon,
and
will play an important role. I think he'll get 2 to 3 wickets a test and play a very good role this summer.
Now, I totally agree with that. I think we've got more opportunity to get 20 wickets. This is a danger game for the Poms. We haven't lost there since 1988 either against the West Indies. But do you know if there's any Brisbane Lions players coming in? Because I might forewarn the boys that
I'm not
aware. It might be a beer after a bowling day.
Day one
at the Gabba.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're allowed to have a beer after a bowling day these days. But I think just double check.
I'm going to get in there. I'm going to place 4 beers if we bowl first for all of them.
Perfect.
All four.
Mate,
of them.
You need to put back in what the sweat takes out, Damien.
Well, that's the way it is. Diz, thanks for that.
Pleasure, mate.
And to take us out, we don't have Ace and DC, but you know we've got Bevo.
We've got Bevo.
Beautiful. Take us out, Bevo.
You've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.